Or you can say Anishkam Karma Yogi, who's coming to the Gyanishta platform. You mean in devotee sense, context. In his bhajan, then he has to accept that which is connecting him with Krishna. Right? Isn't it? It depends on the level of the devotee. We're talking about someone who's at bhava bhakti. Then that which is pleasing to him is to love Krishna in Madhurya Ras. So he's, you know, he's entering into that lila. And that's what's pleasing to him. He sits and does nirjan bhajan, maybe, something like that. You know, like a new bhakta who's a Kanishta Adhikari, he has to more focus on, you know, accepting that which is not pleasing so that he can come to goodness and come to Nishta Bhakti. So therefore, Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. You know. So it depends on what level you're talking, the devotees at. You know, I mean, obviously the advanced devotee, he's not thinking about what is pleasing to me personally, to my senses, or what's not pleasing. Like Prabhupada, he didn't consider whether, he didn't think, oh yeah, I'd like to go to America to have a nice vacation to see the United States before I die. You know, he wasn't thinking like that. He was thinking, my Guru Maharaj told me to preach in the Western countries. I should go and do it. Right? So that was his karma chodana, or his impetus to do it. Because he wanted to please Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Wasn't that he wanted to take a vacation and see America before he died. Like some old Indian men might have this idea. I know. So in any case, the advanced devotees also he doesn't think about what's pleasing to my senses, what not pleasing. He's thinking what's pleasing to Krishna and to Guru. Then he does that. He feels inspiration, thinking that his Guru will be pleased and Krishna will be pleased if I do this. Then that gives him great inspiration. Then he does the work. Okay, well, we discussed this at least two times before, right? The same topic. And I said that in the beginning, it's actually good if the person feels pleasure from the activity, because at least he's engaging in Krishna conscious activities, and we may encourage him to do that which he's attracted to doing. And then later, he'll become more focused on pleasing the object of his devotion, the object of his devotion, his Ishtadev or his Guru, like that. But in the beginning, he can be encouraged to do that which he likes to do. It's kind of like dovetailing, you know. He didn't say anything about what level. He just said this particular person is not attached to thinking in these terms. Because his activities are sattvic. So he's getting sattva-gun gyan from his sattvic actions. That's what allows him to be renounced. So this is like connected with the previous section. And the person in goodness, he's not a ragi worker, right? Or lubdhi. He's doing everything out of duty. So in Gyanamorg, the person's doing karma yoga, right? Then this is an important feature. There's no ruchi in Gyanamorg. When a devotee gets ruchi, then he feels attracted to certain pastimes of Krishna, certain kinds of angas of bhakti over other angas of bhakti. Because then his ruchi kicks in, and then that becomes his impetus. And it's bringing him to Krishna, so then it's good. But these people, these gyanis, they don't have that. So it's just all detachment. So in Bhakti Marg, we follow Gyana Marg up to a point, right? For purification and knowledge and detachment. But then when we get ruchi, then we leave the jnanis behind. Then we let taste control us. or laying down. Laying down on the ground. You know, like the python man. And but it's called fatalist, right? They call, right? Fatalist. Yeah, they're very popular in India also. Yeah, that's when they minimize the role of the jiva to nothing. That's a common misconception. So then you, so what is your question then? Mm-hmm. Right. 17. In the purport, okay. Well, they didn't stop the Americans. They're still going in the hellish direction. Yeah, right. Actually, I considered this thing when I was reading this, and somehow the last couple of days when I was sitting around in my room. I didn't really think of it too much, but it did come into my mind for a moment. That, you know, they also think that, you know, that they've given up their will and they're performing God's will and that they're free. And I was thinking, maybe they're actually free from reaction because they completely give up, you know, they're just thinking about God and they're performing, but it's such an evil activity, right? It's such an ignorant activity. It's kind of like detachment in the mode of ignorance. You know what I mean? like a tamaguna tyagi or something like this. But they don't, you know, they won't get full knowledge because obviously such kind of activity is not ordained by God. It may be, actually, in many ways, they have a lot of points that are true because they say that, you know, the Americans are the white devil. They're polluting the whole planet with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And that's true, and they don't let the, you know, Star TV come into Iran, Iraq, and all these other countries. And you know, the women, they cover their face, and you know, they're very strict in this. And it's true, you know, through the cinema, Hollywood consciousness is spreading all around the planet. People are becoming very degraded. So in that sense, they're true. You know, the way they react or their particular strategy, you know, their abhideya, we don't agree with, but there's some bandha we agree with. You know, and you know, okay. So they're thinking about God and performing these ignorant activities. Yeah, it's questionable. You know, the person actually giving their life for God. It's just like Ladini, you know, Mataji. She gave her life for God. And so these people are doing the same thing. So, you know, I would say they get a mishram, you know, karma reaction for this because there's so much meditating on their Lord, Allah, and at the same time they're performing such a sinful activity. So, it's very interesting, actually, this idea. Right. Okay, now we get to the context. So now we're talking about here. The Supreme Lord is directly telling Arjuna to fight. Okay, that's the first difference. Those people, God's not directly, Allah's not coming to them directly. At least we will accept this, right? Maybe he is, but for the sake of discussion, we'll say, okay, we don't accept it. Allah is directly telling them. Because they're not such great saints, they're just common people, you know. And the second thing is that this was a very special thing, which you're talking about the rule of the whole world, who's going to be the emperor. And you had a partial avatar of Kali, Duryodhana, right? And you have five, you know, Nitya Siddha Parikars of the Lord, of Vasudeva Krishna, the Pandavas there. And Krishna is establishing the righteousness for the whole world and also glorifying his pure devotees, the Pandavas. And we see that also that these, you know, the evil side, Duryodhana and his clan, they did everything to put themselves in the Atitayana category, right? They tried to kill them with flames, with weapons, with poison. They tried to steal their land and wealth and their wife, all five. They deserve to be killed, you know, without a doubt. Okay, maybe the Americans have done some of these, but not all of them, right? They didn't try to, at least before this thing started, they didn't try to kill them. And they may have stolen some money from them. But that's about all, maybe. You know, through the political means, maybe America sucked oil out of the Middle East or something like this. So they, you have a completely different situation. Therefore, you know, the Americans are not Atitayana to the same degree that the Kauravas were. Maybe slightly they stole some money. So, therefore, we can't give credence to their abideya, to their strategy to do this. If they want to not have Star TV and they don't want to import, you know, Playboy magazine, okay, fine, that's great. We will applaud them. But, you know, to kill innocent workers in an office and some old black ladies cleaning the floor, what is that? What, you know, what is? How is Allah going to be pleased? Maybe some of those ladies were Muslims cleaning the floor. Oh, you know, salam alaikum. The whole building. That's, yeah. Yeah, the whole world.
The whole world, yeah.
Yeah.
So that idea was that you, where are you going?
That's true. That's true. But we see that they're not thinking still. They're just angry. I mean, we're thinking, they're thinking, but the Americans, are, most of them are not thinking about what is the, you know, what is the deeper significance of this. They just hate the, you know, the Muslims. What happened after that? There was any guy that was wearing a turban and had a beard, a guy was a Sikh, he was, you know, pumping gas in a gas station in Texas, and the guy was killed the next day just because he looked kind of like from the East. You know what I mean? That's the Americans, they can't discriminate between. The guy was actually Indian, he wasn't from Middle East, he was just a Sikh. And he was killed, at, you know, the next day. Because he represented all of the evil, you know, people from the East. You know what I mean? So anyway, it doesn't seem like any of the Americans are thinking that this has any kind of deep significance, other than the fact that there are some crazy people in the Middle East who don't like us, and who are Muslims, and they're terrorists, and we should kill them. That's all they think, basically. Yeah, they probably will get some kind of... They probably will get something added to all of their bad karma. They'll have, there's some mix... Yeah, that's their karma chodana. You know, their jihad, and they're going to go to Mecca, the Nitya Mecca, something. It's hard to say what they're thinking exactly, but there's some credence there for this idea in their action. There's some validity is there. I mean, it's in the mode of ignorance, but there's still something. Well, yeah, they're not doing these things in the sense of like from a higher order or higher authority. But their doership is not developed enough that they can take responsibility for it. Yeah, sure, there's some doership, but it's not like developed enough where they can feel that I'm doing this action and I'm responsible for the results of this action. They don't think like that. They're just kind of madly doing something without some feeling of responsibility. because they're not it's connected with intelligence, obviously. They're not intelligent enough to understand the ramifications of what they're doing. So I think that doership has to be also defined, which it's not really, it's just this term. But it would seem that person, to be a doer, then he has to understand the ramifications of what he's doing. Because sometimes you come into a court of law and the person breaks the law and you tell the judge, I didn't know that this was wrong. Then the judge say, okay, we'll let you go this time, but if you do it again, you're going to go in jail for a long time. Now get out of here. Right? They do like this sometimes. Or other times they say, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. You have to go to jail. But sometimes judges, depending on the circumstance, of course, you know, he may say, okay, you didn't know. Maybe you're from another country or something like that. You know, okay, now you can go. But don't do it again. Otherwise, if I catch you again, you're finished. I'll lock you up. So, that you know, there is some, you know, knowledge or intelligence is definitely connected with this idea. So someone who's a doer, then he has to know the ramifications. He's responsible for his action. But if someone doesn't know the ramifications, he doesn't have enough knowledge, his intelligence not developed enough, he's crazy, an animal or a child, then you can't say there's full sense of doership in that person. And that's why they're not, in any court of law, in any country, generally they just let those persons go. Children are not kept accountable, animals. Crazy people. Huh? It depends on the circumstance, you know. If he's like just, you know, if a crazy person, you know, his caretaker leaves a gun in the room and he's just looking at it and suddenly, you know, the thing goes off. The bullet goes out the window and kills the neighbor. You know, is he, should, what do you think God will do? Is the person going to be, you know, sent to Yamaloka for sentence for that? No. This foolish guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's got a gun. Just accidentally went off and killed somebody. No, you know, there's different circumstances. That's my point. You have other circumstances. The person's more conscious, then he would get a reaction. Yamaraj will come and say, "You did this." And I'll say, "Yeah, but I didn't know." "Yes, you knew enough. Come with me." You know, like this. So it depends on the circumstance. We can't just give some, you know, blanket law. Just like in Mahabharata, there's this whole thing where they're testing Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra is testing Duryodhana and Yudhisthira. So then they have some guy comes in who did some crime. And then ask Duryodhana, what should we do with him? Just like this. And Yudhisthira, what should we do? Okay, now some brahmana comes. He did some similar crime. So, what Duryodhana, what should we do? Okay, Yudhisthira, what should we do? So, Yudhisthira gets very strict on the Brahmin. And the Shudra just tell him, don't do this again, get out. Because the Brahmin's higher level of consciousness, he's more responsible. Right? So, he got a much stricter sentence. Duryodhana didn't do the same thing. So, then Dhritarashtra understood, yes, Yudhisthira is superior in his ability to rule. Like this. Right? You've heard of this? In Mahabharata, you've read this? It's important. Things are to be judged according to time, place, circumstance, context, and consciousness, and varna and ashram. Everything has to be all considered. Leader means responsibility. Prabhupada mentioned this also about GBC. He said, be careful, if you're a GBC, you're very responsible. He's more accountable for his actions. His consciousness is higher. But still, like, okay, he's so responsible. But he say he's acting, you know, for Krishna. and then something bad happens, then, okay, he'll take responsibility, but actually he's not responsible. I'll give you a good example. There was a Guru Prasad Swami, GBC of South America, and some on one of the farms in his area, some cows were stolen and then brought to the slaughterhouse and sold, something like that. Some crazy devotee did this. You know. And so then it was found out by the cow protection, you know, ministry or whatever, and then came to you know, the GBC. So he submitted his resignation as a GBC because he felt responsible because he was, you know, the GBC of that area. And then they said, no, it's okay, you couldn't have been fully accountable for this. But he felt himself responsible. But the body, they said, it's okay. They could see that actually probably his responsible action and presenting his resignation might have had some even further effect to convince the GBC men that he was innocent. Because that is, you know, the behavior of someone who is on that level, who is a guru, sannyasi, and a GBC. Should be like that. But then it's not that it's not that the GBC should say, yeah, you know, kick him out, you know, like this. Right? They should respond in a different way. But he did the right thing for his idea that he felt responsible. Objectively, maybe he wasn't so responsible for it. Because they can't control every single thing that's going on in this, all these countries, that just one man. Right? You see? So when you're speaking philosophy, you always have to discriminate between subjective and objective things. Especially in Guru Tattva, and here we're talking about, you know, a weird situation, you know, these Muslim terrorists, or you're talking about, you know, GBC in this circumstance. You're talking about subjective, well, how he is supposed to feel, how is he supposed to see it, and then the objective view of the society or the Lord. So especially when you're talking about guru and disciple, then you have to, if you don't define subject and object, then you're going to get all confused. Because, you know, then you get, like in the Shastra says, guru is Shakshat Hari. So then someone becomes a guru and he thinks, yes, I'm Shakshat Hari. That's really crazy, you know, right? No, the disciple sees him as Shakshat Hari. And not that everybody on the street is supposed to see him as Shakshat Hari. Or even the other devotees in the community. Just the disciple, he sees him. Like, because somehow or other, that person's inspiring, you know, that person to come to God. Somehow that disciple feels God's presence in that devotee. But other people may not feel it. So subjective idea is very important. And then the guru, he has to think that I'm just a menial peon, and I I'm a servant of my guru. He never thinks that I'm a guru. Right? And then, you know, you can get to very subtle, you know, ramifications of all of this kind of thing. So you always have to discriminate. Now, I've never heard anyone preach this before, but the more I get into the philosophy and the application of the philosophy, the more I see subjective and objective views have to be understood. Otherwise, you can never actually get the real full Tattva Siddhanta. You'll always be confused about what to do and what not to do, how to apply and how not to apply. Yeah, you can bring it to that level, sure. Yeah, because you still, although you're suffering and you accept that, but you still want to use your body to serve the Lord. And you know that the body is valuable in doing your bhajan, in developing Krishna consciousness. So therefore you do that to continue to use the body that was given to you. It's an instrument given to you, so you're meant to keep it healthy. You made a mistake in the past, but that doesn't mean you should continue that mistake now or in the future. So you accept the fact that the body's suffering due to some foolish thing you did in the past, but not to continue the foolishness. It's maybe on the border of using this kind of paradigm. Subjective and objective may not be so much applicable or in this kind of example. But objective means kind of more level-headed, and subjective means your mood in any circumstance, your vision. So, but a more advanced devotee, instead of dividing subjective and objective, he'll say, this body was given to me by God. I made a mistake in the past. Now let me try to correct it. Now I accept the suffering, and I also accept the suffering that I have to take this medicine, which also may be another kind of suffering. You know, but my duty is to keep the body healthy for serving Krishna. Therefore I do this. Something like this.
Lack of
Krishna. Yeah, a pretty strong statement, huh?
So, I think
the word responsible has different meanings, actually. Well, not different applications. Responsible meaning here, I'm the doer, you know, kevalam karta. And that there's no other factor, right? And the other common use of the word responsibility is someone who is efficient, careful. Right? Like this. Yeah, right. This is like the negative sense of it. It's connected. Here, responsibility means negatively that I'm the only doer. There's no other cause. I'm doing this alone by my own strength. I don't need God. I'm responsible. I can do it. This is the kind of asuric, rajasic connotation of the word responsible. That's how it's being used here. Responsible has a positive and negative connotation. The positive one is more goodness. Like in Ukraine, there was an air show. And the jet fighters were doing all these far-out things. And one of them, you know, came down and crashed and then, you know, just went right into the crowd of people and just mauled, just like a lawnmower. Just, you know, arms and legs went flying everywhere. And there was hundreds of people killed, children, and, you know, it was like a massacre. So the guy, the head of the Air Force, he handed in his resignation. That was the right thing for him to do. So he felt responsible. But the responsible in the kind of rajasic or asuric level means that, you know, I can do this alone. I don't need God, and I alone will be the cause of the result of the activity. So Krishna said that you don't think that you're the cause of your activity. Right? Karma nyeva dikaraste, mahapalesha gadacha. A karma phala hetu bo. You're not. Don't think that you're the hetu of the karma phala. Because you're not. Not ultimately. I mean, you should try your best, but what can you do? You should be responsible in the sattvic sense, but not in the rajasic sense. This kind of details are not described here. That's why I say, I mean, that's why I read this, because it's interesting. You could take it the wrong way, obviously, this sentence. Right? Responsibility arises from godlessness. Yes, so let's just, you know, become, you know, fatalists. Leave everything up to God. Just surrender completely to the will of God. Yes, Then they try to wake you up in the morning and say, no, it's all the will of God. I'm going, go back to sleep. You know, you can completely, you know, misconstrue everything from that point. Everything can go to hell, that's all right. My wife and children, let the Lord take care of them. He's the doer, I'm not. Right? You should see the Lord, but then you should think, well, what's my role to play? The Christian Catholic monk or bishop, he said that we should act as if everything depends on us, but we should pray as if everything depends on him. So a person acts responsibly, but ultimately he knows that everything's been controlled by God. Because he knows that I'm only one of the five factors, and the most important and ultimate cause is the super soul. He's the super cause behind everything. So anyway, the devotee tries to always see what the Lord wants, but and then the more advanced he is, then the more he tries to do that. But it may be that the Lord wants different things of him. So he has to decide, well, what is the priority now? I mean, you get to a fine line. You get to a fine line. And then you get down to someone's personal life. Just like Ladini Mataji, she was invited by Bhakti Tirtha Swami to go to Africa. But she didn't have to go. Right? It was just a kind of casual invitation. Why don't you come to Africa and preach for a while? Yeah, okay. And then he left, and she took it very seriously. You know. And someone else or maybe if she was still taking care of the Jagannath deities in New Vrindavan, she would have thought, well, it would be nice, but I have my responsibility. Obviously, I can't just give this up. You know what I mean? It's like, but if the Lord, the next day, it was arranged that, you know, someone else became the head pujari, and then, you know, someone gave you a airplane ticket to go to Ghana. You know, it becomes more clear. Oh, God wants me to go to Africa and preach. You know. But until that time, it may not. You know, a devotee may not think that that's so important, or maybe it's just coincidence or something like this. Just like, you know, during this thing with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, when he was taking brahmacharis from the temples in America on the Radha Damodar party, and all the presidents were up in arms, and there was a whole thing in Mayapur, there was all this kind of political confrontation. And then they came to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said this famous thing, you know, resolution, no solution. Revolution, resolution, no solution. And then, you know, so anyway, finally he decided, you know, that, yeah, it's great, let the Grihasthas, they can be the presidents, and you have to, you know, do something else like that. And then Tamal Krishnamar said something like, well, I mean, what am I supposed to do? They can send me to the moon or send me to China or somewhere. Right? And then the next day, Prabhupada called him in right after Mangal Arati. And he understood, uh-oh, I said the wrong thing. Because Trivikram Maharaj was the one, he came to him in Mangal Arati and said, Prabhupada wants to see you. Oh no. Then he said, I'm not going. Immediately he told like this, you know, to Trivikram Swami. So anyway, he said, he went to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada was, you know, coming out of the bath, he's put on his tilak. He said, so yesterday you said that that you mentioned about going to China. And he said, I was just joking. I mean, like, you know, going to the moon or something. He says, you might have been joking, but the Lord has spoken through you. And he said, but what about my Radha Damodar party? What about all this work I have to be doing? And he said, I'm not going to go. And Prabhupada's hands started shaking. He became very angry. He said, you must go. I take everything away from you. And you just sit in my appointment, chant Hare Krishna, or you go to China. You have two choices. Then he said, oh. And I think it was Guru Kripa was in the back. He said, I'll go. And he said, no, I want him to go. You know what I mean? It's like Prabhupada took this little thing, you know, and he saw it as Krishna. Right? He was, Tamal Krishnamurti was just joking. He wasn't, he didn't have any idea of going to China. For him it was like going to the moon. But Prabhupada took this, you know, that this is Krishna speaking through. So it depends on our level, you know, how we see the Lord and what we're responsible for. And yes, that's correct. So according to your analysis, then these terrorists are still accountable, even though they seem to think that they're doing it for God. Because God doesn't say in the Quran anywhere that you should go and, you know, explode, you know, some buildings, you know, or in the trains or the undergrounds. You know, when the demons, you know, become sinful, then you should go and explode yourself and kill everybody, along with innocent people. I don't think you're going to find any statements in the Quran like this. I don't think Allah would come directly and say, yes, this is good, go and kill them. It's crazy. It's just they're fakirs, and their leaders are, they're fanatics, they're terrorists. So but they hold the authority. So those people under them are also, you know, going to hell along with those terrorists. But those leaders, they're going to go to the darkest region of ignorance, because they have more responsibility than those just individuals who are being sent. I would say that this is the philosophy applied in this case. That those individuals are somewhat innocent in being directed by their leaders, and the leaders get the brunt of that karma, and they get some. They're relieved somewhat because of their lessened sense of doership. Yeah, instigator of murder. Yeah, they undermine the whole Vedic civilization. Right. I don't think God likes that very much. They're using his name to free themselves for some foolish act in all cases. Okay, I think we've come to the end of our rope in this discussion. It's already 8 o'clock, 5 to 8. Let's have our last comment. And that's true. Because they're riding on their piety. They're sent to a place where there's no karma to enjoy. But later they come back and then they are responsible. I think it's like a vacation for them, where there's no accountability, or there's no immorality amongst the devas. Was it Urvashi told to Arjuna this philosophy? Because Arjuna said, "I see, you're like my, you know, great 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 grandmother. How can I?" And she said, "Come on, there's no immorality here. This is Svarga. Everybody can just enjoy as they like." He said, "Yes, but I'm from the mortal world. I cannot help my feelings like that." Yeah, it's true. Anyway, that would have to be kind of reconciled along with his paradigm. But in general, I would say that's correct. No, but that was a curse from Narada. That's not karma. That's directly from the Bhakti Shakti avatar, Narada Muni. That's from aparad, then he cursed them, which was a blessing too. It has nothing to do with karma at all. That's aparad, guru aparad. That's not karma. That's in a different field. Aparad and karma are different. Yeah, but they're, you can't say animals because they're so cultured. They're mainly in goodness with some passion, and animals are mainly in ignorance. But they're allowed to, they can have sex with different women, they don't have to get married, and, you know, there's just society girls there. It's like a, you know, it's kind of like a vacation place where there's just prostitutes and then you can just enjoy. And they're very beautiful and that's what swarga is all about. It's fulfilling your desires in a very sophisticated, cultured way. They're not what? They have children at the very end of their life, right before they pass away. No, they don't have children until the very end of their life. I can't answer all these questions. The sutras are there, and there may be some exceptions. I don't know all this, you know, Hindu folklore that you know. I'm a philosopher. These are all from curses, though, right? There's no karma, though. That's just aparad. I think this is the generalized, because I've read it in different places, and it seems very logical, and they don't have karma. Not only in London, in the whole Western countries, everywhere. Yeah, that's the culture. That's the whole purpose of going there. So they're not there to perform vidhis and dharmas and, you know, maryada. They're just enjoying it. They did that already here on earth. And now they're free. Now they can just enjoy without incurring any sin. That's the purpose of swarga. Then they come down again and they act piously and then they go back there and enjoy again. It's like, you know, it's like the paycheck or the vacation. It's like the reward. Some more, you know, unlimited, free sense enjoyment without any ramifications. Legal sense enjoyment. So the laws and the social customs are different there than they are here. That's different from morality. I mean, morality in the sense of conventional morality, vidhis, you know, varnashram regulations, these things. Aparad is also always there. Can always happen. Cursing and such things. Who's praying to Brahma? The sons of Marichi. So that because of their offense, then they took birth as the sons of Kalanimi. Thank you. Yeah, Kalanimi. And Hiranyakashipu first. Right? Actually, in the commentaries, they took birth as the sons of Hiranyakashipu first, and then the sons of Kalanimi. Then Devaki. Yeah. So they went through a whole thing. But anyway, it's also Leela. they appear in Devaki's womb, and then Krishna brings them back at the end of his Leela. I don't know. If I was ever there, which I doubt, I would have long forgotten. You think about it, you try to apply it. I'm just telling you some sutras and... What can I can't explain every circumstance. Especially, you know all these things more than I do. Huh? Okay, we'll stop now. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.